This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Hello and welcome again to Addicted to Recovery with Elaine and Steph today. How are you doing, Elaine?
Good morning and welcome to who's ever listening out there.
Yeah, it's a pretty cold day today here in the Hawke's Bay. We're in the middle of June 2025.
Yeah.
I found myself running 26 the other day. I was way ahead of myself.
Not yet.
No, but it is beautiful here in the Hawke's Bay. I certainly enjoy the morning walk and the sunrise and...
Sunrise was beautiful this morning.
And the moon has been incredible.
Yep, moon last night.
Although for some people it really affects sleep and mood, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Although I had a good sleep.
Oh, good for you. So what are we talking about today? Well, we thought we'd tackle the topic of cross-addiction. It's quite a big topic, actually, and often one that people really aren't aware of or perhaps haven't talked much about. And so we thought, yeah, great one. Let's have a chat about it today. So... It definitely shows up amongst the guests that we work with, and over the years that I've been working in rehab, definitely meet people who either come in with multiple addictive type of behaviours or in their recovery sort of transfer, if you like, their addictive behaviours onto something else.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so one of the challenges is how do we even know if we are cross-addicting? What are we cross-addicting to? What are the kind of behaviours that show us what cross-addiction is? So it can be something that's obviously damaging, like the drug or alcohol misuse that we're familiar with. So it can be those things, or it can be something like exercising and, you know, how bad is exercise? It could be food. It could be
gambling, sex, shopping,
Our
phones, coffee, sugar, you know, the list goes on.
It sure does.
And I think when you're looking at cross addiction, it's whether is it affecting your life?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And isn't that exactly how we look at addiction initially when we kind of work with someone to work out is what they're doing a problem?
That's right.
Yeah, you mentioned food and sugar and shopping and coffee, and I'm sure people are going, so?
They're all good things in moderation.
Pretty much like everything, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
There's not really many really bad behaviours or activities. It's all about how often we do it and how excessive it may become. So I will give you a description that I sort of looked up. A cross-addiction can be known as addiction transfer, that's pretty straightforward, or addiction interaction disorder, when a person has two or more addictive behaviours. And like the things we've talked about, alcohol, drugs, food, gambling, sex, gaming or other compulsive behaviours. And maybe that's the term that we need to be thinking about, that compulsion to do something again and again.
When you're totally obsessed with it.
Mm.
And when we're talking about obsession, not that obsessed that I love my new jacket, we're talking about obsessed all day about it.
Yeah. And like many addictions, it generally doesn't start off like that, does it?
That's right.
It kind of builds. However, if you've had an addictive pattern in your life to one of the more obvious things like the alcohol or drugs, gambling that we generally deal with, you're definitely more prone to picking up that sort of new behaviour.
Well, you know, when we're in active addiction or when we have addictive qualities within us, we are always wanting to what's good for us or what we perceive as good for us, we want more of. If we like it, we want more of it. And that's what happens with the drugs and the alcohol. We love it. That's why we use it.
Yeah.
And we want more of it. And, you know, I know that we use it to numb pain and all of those things, but there's a certain aspect that we love being high or intoxicated and escaping from the world.
Yeah. That escape, that distraction is a part of it, isn't it? Have you seen examples of cross-addiction in your own experience, Elaine? Or, in, you know, yourself, have you noticed it? Or other people maybe that you've worked with?
Yeah, no, definitely I've noticed it in myself. In my early years of sobriety, I didn't. But when I was about 5 years sober, I noticed the sugar. You know, loved the lollies. Eat a whole bag of lollies and then feel that sort of sugar slump come on, and and sleep and then feel over, you know, a bit hungover from the sugar.
Yeah.
And it was just the same behaviour as my drinking, you know, pick up one jet plane, eat the whole packet, pick up one chippy, eat the whole packet, you know. It didn't matter what it was, and I could recognise it. And it's hard to pull it back sometimes. But also people have challenged me about when I'm overeating on the sugar or, the, you know, the lollies mainly is my cross-addiction probably, jet planes in particular, is what's going on for me that's wanting me to do that?
Yes.
You know, what is going on? What am I not facing? What, you know, what is it? Is, have I got some pain in my life? And I know that eating jet planes doesn't make it better, but at least I get to keep my sobriety, which is my logic. Yeah. It may not be your logic, but that's my logic. I don't pick up a drink. I might pick up lollies or chippies or whatever that is. I'm not a binge eater, but I do love, you know, if I have one lolly, I want another. If I have a chocolate, I want another. And it's very common within our recovery community. And sometimes it's, you know, we have a laugh about it, and other times it becomes quite serious because then we have over what we call overeaters, and, you know, we need to take get some professional help to help that.
And I guess really that comes back to understanding, is what I'm doing causing harm to me or perhaps to others?
That's right.
And, you know, we can have different things to look at. So is it potentially impacting my health? You mentioned energy and sort of sugar hangover, that kind of thing. Is it impacting our mood? And again, if we were to go for sugar, we have those highs and lows that happen, isn't it?
And it feels good at the time eating them, but, you know, you do feel a bit sluggish the next day. And you go, why are you doing that to yourself? You know, the same question I'd do with the drinking. You know, if I drink too much, you're going to feel bad tomorrow, but you still do it.
Do it anyway.
You know, that's why you need all those tools to work through that stuff and to be honest and open and authentic with yourself to actually stop that sort of cross addiction. Mine is particularly with the sugar. I smoked in early recovery, and I took up smoking again in early recovery. I'd stopped, you know, but it was just another thing that I had to deal with. And I would buy a packet of smokes when life wasn't going so well, you know.
And you've worked, because you do a lot of peer support work, and especially in your early years, once you were in your own solid recovery, you started to give back a lot. You've continued to do that, of course, through your rehab as well. But, you know, looking around you, did you notice others experiencing similar things, as in cross-addicting to other behaviours?
Gambling. I see a lot of gamblers giving up alcohol, picking up gambling. Sex addiction can be quite high in the community. Food is an obvious one. Sometimes shopping. Shopping can be quite...
I need to put my hand up there sometimes. So pull it back, Steph.
Yeah, you know, and shopping does affect our financial situation, and it can affect others. And all in gambling the same, you know. What we notice with cross addiction is that so sneaky behaviours come in. We hide it. You know, when we're hiding it, when we're keeping it a secret, we're not telling anybody, you know, that's a dangerous place to be.
I guess that's quite a key, isn't it? So we're identifying whether or not a something we're doing is a problem. And so we can have those obvious things that we know about. Is it impacting our health, our mood? Is it impacting our finances, our capacity to live life? And you just talked about the behaviour of hiding it. So that's part of our values, isn't it? If we're no longer being honest. To ourselves and to others as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we're hiding it, we're in trouble.
Exactly. So it is a kind of early warning sign for yourself, isn't it? For us, if we notice we're starting to hide a behaviour or not allow others to see quite how much we're doing it. Where's that coming from?
Where is it coming from? It's, you know, usually for myself, I'm not dealing with something called life's getting a bit hard, and I think I treat myself, you know, like... There's that old saying, you're not a dog, you know, like I forget the saying now about being, you know, we treat our dogs with treats for good behaviour.
Rewards, yeah.
Rewards. You're not a dog, Elaine. You don't need a treat like that. I can't remember the exact saying, but
we have to look that one up because it sounds like it could be a good one.
Yeah.
So, you know, wondering really how common it is, and I think actually it's extremely common.
Not just
in the community we work with, although that's where we come from. But
Yeah, it's a real sense of comfort, especially the food one, because there's that sort of what we call comfort eating as well.
Yes. Yeah. And we certainly see a lot of people coming through the recovery world who don't come in with just one addictive behaviour. They can have several, even if initially what brings them in is the obvious outstanding alcohol, drugs issue. But, you know, why does the brain allow that to happen? You know, it's back to the old, good old dopamine, isn't it? That feel good.
You want the hit. Yeah, the dopamine hit. Sometimes you don't even realise that you're chasing it.
Mm.
It's just almost like a default setting. And
yeah.
our new, you know, those neuropathways that we build, the new ones when we're sober, takes a while to really not, you know, to open those pathways up and not let them overgrow and go down a different, you know, and go back to our addictive pathways.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, particularly in early recovery, cross-addiction is quite a significant risk, and we do see it quite often.
Yeah.
The brain has been used to certain boosts of dopamine, and the brain has been used to functioning with the highs and lows of the dopamine. So it's used to you seeking it out regularly. And over time, generally needing more and more of a substance to get the same kick of dopamine. And I'll use methamphetamine as a really good example there. It causes a massive release of dopamine. Quite incredible, those people tell me, in their initial uses of methamphetamine. But over time, the brain does fight back because it's actually not good for us to have that level of dopamine flooding the brain. And we become depleted. So you need more of a substance and you need it more often. That's really obvious, methamphetamine addiction. The other, I'm going to use the word smaller or less obvious, addictive behaviours don't give us quite the same surge of dopamine. Even smoking a cigarette actually gives a little surge of
dopamine. When I first had that first cigarette, I was about a year sober. I used to smoke, and I'd given up smoking before drinking, and I'll never forget the rush that went through my body.
Yeah.
And that led to sort of an on and off addiction for quite some years before I finally put them down and thought, this is disgusting. You just don't need this, Elaine.
Yeah. There's excitement too, isn't there? Yeah. And is that dopamine, or is that just our thinking, whoa, I'm doing something I probably shouldn't?
Yeah, it's true. And you get to keep your sobriety. So that's the way I always looked at it, which is not really probably the correct way. If I eat the jet planes or have a cigarette or I'm not a gambler or sex addiction or shopping really, but I got to keep my sobriety because I hadn't picked up a drink.
Yes.
And it was almost a justification.
I was about to say that,
It's a total justification, not almost, it was a total justification. Yeah. And so when I look at it in that manner, what I've tried to do over the years is teach myself that you can eat the jet planes, you just don't have to have the whole packet. You know, it's okay, you know, but you do have to be careful with the sugar, because once you pick up that first bit of sugar or chocolate, man, it just hits that dopamine, eh? And you're like, oh, I want another one.
And look, in early recovery, we absolutely see that, and we see it in our wonderful guests. There is a big push for sugar consumption.
Yeah. And coffee.
And coffee.
Strong coffee, like short blacks. You know, I used to do short blacks. I don't even drink coffee. And that was years ago, short blacks with lots of sugar. Because you knew you could get a hit from it.
Yeah. we do. We have people we find they're having shots of coffee, aren't they? We have to have a conversation there.
Yeah.
The challenge is, you know, is there anything wrong with that? And we're going to say, no, everything in moderation is okay. So how do you know when it's becoming a problem, I guess, is that next step to
someone
look at?
Might be noticing. Although, you know, other people around us find our behaviour unacceptable when we're in active addiction. But I never changed until I found my own behaviour unacceptable.
Right. Good point.
And that's the only way we're going to find change is when I think it's not right. Steph might think, Elaine, you're eating the whole bag of jet planes again. You know, if you got a problem, it's like, well, no, I'm actually okay with it. So I have to find it within myself.
Yeah.
And it's that sense of worth and that willingness, you know. my observations of being in the recovery community for many years is that people have to have a real willingness and their self-worth.
Yes.
You know, because we're, especially early recovery, we really berate ourselves, we don't like ourselves, and so we treat ourselves badly sometimes. Mm. So the more we grow our self-worth and do our self-care, which so that we are worthy of it, the better we are to be able to make better decisions every day.
Yeah.
And that, and we have that willingness to stay sober or stay off the sugar or whatever that addiction is, that cross addiction that you've crossed to. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always got to be your decision, isn't
yeah.
it? And you may well be impacted by the feedback of others around you because
yeah.
perhaps your relationship becomes under pressure or your work yeah. or you can no longer fit your wardrobe.
Or, yeah. You know. Or gambling. You yeah. know, that really affects families.
That's
and we
a biggie.
Know that. You know, it's huge and mm. it affects people's bank account. You
yes.
know, people lose their houses. You know, those are serious cross addictions or mm. sometimes that's a primary addiction for someone.
Yeah.
So, you know, it depends what sort of problems it's causing in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how we start to recognise it. I mean, Elaine referenced earlier on about that hiding.
Mm.
So, and that's your values, really. Is it okay that you're doing something and you're not telling others? If you can't be open and transparent about it, mm. then that tells you that you're actually not comfortable with what you're
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. If you have to hide it, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And you know, like, if you're sober from another substance, you know those keeping secrets keep us sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that knowing it for you, isn't it?
That's right.
And so is there a bit of loss of control? So, like, again, Elaine said about not having the one jet plane eating the pack, the one ship eating the pack.
Mm.
I could say something I've noticed about myself recently I'm working on is shopping. And I could justify why I need to change my wardrobe. and I'm not going to do that at the moment. But, yeah, so I won't just buy one top. I'll buy two tops and a pair of jeans and a pair of shoes because I have to have the whole outfit.
Yeah.
Something I'm working on.
Well, I think that's not a bad thing, Steph, but
it's a balance.
But, you know, there again, like if you have a shopping addiction and it's affecting your
finance,
family budgets,
yeah.
budget and finances, then it is becoming a problem. Mm. And if you're hiding it, oh, this old top, you know, that
yes.
remember that old statement?
Oh, yeah. No, I've had this for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. you know, then you might have a slight problem with shopping.
Yeah. I think because we work in this realm of addiction and making changes, I'm constantly addressing and looking at my behaviour. So I've been intrigued at my shopping process and noticing how often I pick up my
yeah.
phone to have a look online.
I think what happened for me, I'm just going to go drop back a bit. When I first got sober, I just thought alcohol was a problem.
Mm.
And I was quite adamant that I was just an alcoholic, not an addict, just an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And on my journey in those first couple of years, it was, I think, as I said, it was about 5 years sober, I realised that actually there is an addict sitting inside you, Elaine, and it's only by, you know, doing the work that I've done that has shown me that other addictions can easily come to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm.
So there might be a bit of loss of control, a bit of emotional dependence, secrecy or shame, and then it's increasing. The impact of it is increasing.
Yeah.
Another way we know things are going wrong. And sometimes it's masked as quite healthy. So dieting can be a compulsion, an addiction. Exercise
yeah.
can be a compulsion or an addiction. So there are lots of different things, and some of them are really healthy. So what do you do when someone says, you're running every day, I think it's too much, you're not spending enough time with the family, and the person may respond, well, I'm looking after my sobriety and I'm staying healthy, do you want me not to be fit?
Mm.
There's all sorts of things that can happen, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when we send our clients home with the message, recovery first to make it last.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you've got responsibilities in life, you have to fit that recovery with your responsibilities, but you have to put it in front of everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean go out 4 hours of running, you know, which is a cross addiction.
Yeah.
Let's talk just quickly about exercise, because
yes.
exercise, you know, we have this challenging conversation with people sometimes about, I have to do an hour in the morning or 2 hours at the gym and an hour in the afternoon. And I always challenge people on that. Not about the length. If you want to do that, that's fine. But it's about what happens when you get injured.
Yes.
And you can't arrest that addiction.
So you're talking now about, so somebody who's made some significant changes and they're in recovery from one primary addiction, we'll yeah. call it, like perhaps alcohol or drugs.
Yeah.
And part of their recovery tools and strategies is this regular exercise
That's
regime.
Right. Yeah. yeah. And so we always encourage our clients to find other tools and strategies, meditation, good routine, good yes. nutrition, gentle walks, you know, like it's okay to do a gentle walk. You don't always have to thrash your body. Mm. But to always have tools other than exercise if you're using it as your recovery tool. But if it's a cross addiction, when I'm talking about someone that's going to the gym for 2 hours every morning and then another hour at night, that's a cross addiction. That's not healthy for your body. Yeah.
And we have people coming in to the rehab already doing that as well.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, that's how I've kept myself healthy. And I'm sort of feeling quite horrified inside considering the pressure they've put their body under alongside the addiction, the stress yeah. that their body's under. Exercise is a wonderful thing, but like everything, it's in balance. Mm. And how do you work out what is a healthy balance for you? Now, we're all individuals, aren't we?
Mm.
So you may need to continue to have a bit of counselling, guidance and discussion to understand whether or not you're cross-addicting too far. And is your exercise a good, healthy balance? I have an amazing, gorgeous daughter who does an incredible amount of exercise. But she's got her life pretty much in balance, her work, her social life, etc. But it can very easily tip over there, can't it? And then I think what you were really referring to, what happens when you're injured,
yep.
and it's a big part of your recovery. So just comment a little bit on that, Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, if you get, and we've had this happen. We've had someone that loves to run,
yep.
and they broke their leg. And sadly, they did relapse because they couldn't use running as a tool in their recovery.
Mm.
So that's why we, at Ocean Hills, we give a lot of tools like meditation, good routine, good nutrition, you know, setting an intention to be sober every
yes.
day, leaning into supports like peer support groups, psychologists, counsellors, whatever your supports are, so that if the running component of your strategy of staying sober couldn't happen, you've still got other tools to use. Yeah.
And that's a great example of life balance, isn't it? Bringing
Absolutely.
In other strategies.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot in recovery about connection. That social connection is a big part of recovery as well. So
yeah.
consider, is your exercise something you're doing on your own? Not that there's anything wrong with going for a run on your own, but consider, is that stopping you having good connection with other people potentially, or have you got the balance? And, you know, how do you know if you've got balance? What kind of things are going to help you understand, firstly, if you're cross-addicting, and secondly, how to bring that back into a healthy space. So Elaine's referenced a lot of possible options. Peer support groups is a great one. You're often more open and transparent with people who've had similar experiences as well.
I agree, yeah.
You might take, certainly some peer support groups are quite straightforward and blunt and will reflect what they see.
Yeah, no, those support groups are extremely helpful, whether it's CADS, AA, Smart Recovery, online. You know, there is a number of tools out there that you can use to tap into.
Yeah. And a great place, as always, to start is if you really just don't know, start by having a chat to your GP or your health practitioner. Many practices now have a health improvement practitioner or health coaches available. Understanding what's going on with you emotionally, spiritually, if your practice, what you're doing, is aligned with your recovery, do you have meaningful routines in your day? All the usual things we talk about, really. You're having a look at that again. So we're coming towards the end of our chat. So maybe just going over the key points. Firstly, I really want to say cross addiction is really common, and it's not, you're not failed that that's happened. It's really understandable. Your brain has been working with an addictive process for a really long time.
Yeah.
And when you drop one addictive behaviour, your brain's going to look around for another.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
We like anything that's, you know, anything that's good for us, we want more of.
Absolutely. That's good for us. That's interesting, eh? So again, it'll be
about balance. What our perception is.
Yes, yeah. What we like.
Or anything we like, I should say. That's wrong. Sorry, take that back. Scratch that out. Anything that we like and we really like, we want more of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it feels good.
Yeah.
It creates those amazing positive feelings, the endorphins, the dopamine, the whole lot. So don't please feel that, oh, my goodness, I've dropped the drink and now I've got this other addiction. I'm a failure. You're not. You're human. You're normal. Yeah. And it's about understanding that's what happens in the brain.
Mm.
And it's leaning back into your recovery supports, your recovery routines and lifestyle.
Yeah. And I just want to say, you know, if you've recovered from alcohol and drugs and you are suffering a few little thing, different addictions, you know, don't beat yourself up because that primary addiction is still in its right place for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's that you get to use the same tools to make the changes if you've identified you've got something happening in addiction, cross addiction. Hey, Elin, that was a good chat. As always, we start off not showing if we're going to have much to talk about. There's always more.
We had lots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening to Addicted to Recovery today, and we hope you have a wonderful day wherever you are.
Thank you.
This information shared here, including any show notes and links, is for general information purposes only. It's never a substitute, nor is it intended to provide individualized medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, nor can it be construed as such. Please always consult your health professional for individual guidance and recommendations. Please reach out. Don't do this on your own. Thank you so much for listening to us today. Thanks, Elaine.
And thanks, Steve. Lovely to be here.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.